Hey, this is your host Brian Wayne here, and I'm here to let you know, in case you did not know already, that the Cheers to Comics podcast has since evolved. And if you're looking for a new shiny place to get your comic books from, then you need to head on over to shopcheerstocomics.com. It's like cheerstocomics.com, only with a shop in front of it. Shopcheerstocomics.com, and if you use code PODCAST at checkout, you're going to save yourself 10%, and I'm constantly adding new inventory, hot spec books, everything, any type of book under the sun. As it comes under my radar and it gets added into the inventory, I make it available to you. So remember, head on over to shopcheerstocomics.com and use code PODCAST at checkout and save yourself 10%. A pre-roll time. The Cheers to Comics podcast is proudly sponsored by Inked Marketing Solutions and the Inked Marketing crowdfunded comic for this yaw episode. Well, it's gonna belong to The Last Night of Twilight. Coming soon from the producer of Pinky and the Brain, Animaniacs, Batman Beyond, Static Shock, and the new Batman Superman Adventures. Yes, the man is a legend in animation. Pinky and the Brain, sold right there. The Last Night of Twilight. What happens when you're broke, but your endless war against crime isn't over? The Last Night of Twilight is a story about an everyday superhero. He has no powers, he has no thirst for justice, but now his body is starting to portray him, but he just can't stop. Even a personal injury suit and losing all of his cool stuff won't stop him. His sidekick turning bad? That ain't gonna stop him. His former adversaries returning. Or retiring. Not returning. Retiring. That ain't gonna stop him. But age? Age is a son of a bitch. Age is gonna... might stop him. It might. I don't know. We have a comic book here, people. Like I said, the team behind this... I can't wait to see... Oh, I'm looking at this cover here, man. You got this pretty dark hooded looking figure. And you got like a walker. Like an old man walker. Not a Walker Texas Ranger. Like a tennis ball on the feet type of walker. I love it, man. I love it so much. I'm into it. So head on over to www.twinight.com. That's TWIKNIGHT.com. And get in on this, man. I got a good feeling. And like I said, Pinky and the Brain. Come on. Come on.
Age of Radio.
Welcome back to the Cheers to Comics podcast. I'm your host, Brian Wayne, and this is episode 362. The 362nd episode of the Cheers to Comics podcast will be a creator corner. And, the creator that I have cornered on this year episode. Well, she's a badass. She's breaking ground in the Cheers to Comics podcast way by being the first ever ongoing DC creator that I've been able to snag on this. I've had plenty of miniseries creators from DC and past creators that have done amazing things with DC, but as far as getting a creator working on an ongoing DC book, it's taken almost 3 years to do that. Well, who is it, Brian? I didn't look to bother at the name of the episode at all. Stephanie Phillips, people. Stephanie Phillips. She's doing Harley Quinn. She's done badass stuff like A Man Among Ye from Image Comics, which is currently ongoing now. I mean, she's just a beast in the game and a fresh face on top of it all. So we gotta love this. Gotta love a creator of this caliber. I know I was very, very excited to make this happen. So and so excited, in fact, that I might have even kind of made an ass of myself to old Stephanie Phillips. Let's see if you could figure out where it happens. I don't know, man. I get ahead of myself. I get excited. And, yeah, you know, you'll just have to see. You'll have to see. But before we get all into that, I got a shout out from the rooftops, one of my favorite places on planet Earth to get comics, 307nerdsforever.com, the newest affiliate of the Cheers to Comics podcast. Yeah, man, 307nerdsforever.com. When you're checking out 307nerdsforever.com, use code CHEERS and save yourself 10%. And I'm going to tell you right now, be prepared. Be prepared for amazing customer service. An incredible array of books placed way under fair market value as far as that modern hotness. Oh, yeah, people. It's like that. I get good stuff all the time. It's kind of my honey hole in a way. And here I am, just giving it away to you. But use code CHEERS, and it makes it even better for you. Save 10%. So 307nerds4, the number 4, ever.com. 307nerdsforever.com. Now, I'm not going to stall you anymore, people. I've got an amazing conversation with the one and only Stephanie Phillips. All right, Stephanie, how are you doing?
Excellent. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, this is my pleasure. I gotta say, you're breaking ground on this podcast. I've done over 100 of these now, and somehow I have yet to manage to snag a DC ongoing writer.
And that's awesome.
Here you are writing stuff that I'm enjoying thoroughly with Harley Quinn and amongst other things. That was by far the thing that put you on my radar, though. I gotta say, it was Butcher of Paris for me. I'm a massive fan of that book. I love true stories like that. But I'm gonna get into all of that. I just gotta say, I'm so impressed with everything you've done in such a short amount of time in this industry. And here we are on the podcast talking with Stephanie Phillips. This is awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here, and I really appreciate that. It's I'm really fortunate to get to work on all those titles, so I'm glad you're enjoying them.
Absolutely. Before we get into all the amazing stuff that you're doing now, I like to know, and as well as the listener, you know, I like to know the origin story of the people that create the things that, you know, we all love and enjoy. So, I mean, I have to start with just the most basic of questions, but when did comics become a part of your life? Were you a late bloomer, or were you somebody that always enjoyed comics, or did that play a part?
I always enjoyed comics. The animated series, Batman, the animated series, was really like my gateway into comics. I grew up with that in the 90s and just like was obsessed with it. So, it definitely led to like seeking out other Batman stuff. You know, I think it was like realizing that you could go get comics and just like read more Batman all the time was really cool.
It wasn't just that 30 minutes out after school. I mean, there was more. Yes. No, I love that.
It was a super cool discovery. I think for a long time I was really just like, oh my God, the cover art for this is really cool. I'm going to get this, because I was a kid and, I didn't really know anyone that read comics. So I was just grabbing things that I thought was cool. I think the first thing that I owned like all together was the Long Halloween. I'm pretty sure that was the first thing I owned like all of as a set, and like realized that I was reading like, you know, a complete story and not just picking up issues I thought looked cool. So, and then I don't know, I think around high school, I probably started branching out to other stuff, more Marvel titles. And then I don't think I started reading indie stuff until a lot later. Like that's definitely something that I didn't really come to until probably more college age, like realizing that there was more than DC and Marvel.
Right. And I remember finding out, you know, or diving into the indie world myself, and just how important that was to actually, you know, realize that comics are so much more than spandex and superpowers. Not that there's anything wrong with that, I mean, I love my superheroes, but for me, it was finding Chu. When I found Chu, I realized that there was so much more to comics in general. Do you remember the book, the indie series or title or whatever it may be that made you realize, okay, this is a whole different type of thing?
I don't know that I remember like the first one. I do remember like Saga hit me really hard, when that first came out. I was just like, whoa. Like, you know, there's some themes in here that, like, you know, are similar to things that we've seen in like Shakespeare. Like, it started to become this really cool thing to start like analyzing and really like diving into the characters. I mean, obviously I love the artwork. Fiona Staples is amazing. I think that was one of those things that just you know, following that became something that I was super excited to go get every time it came out.
Yeah, no, Saga really is just one of those titles too. Because I remember I introduced my fiance to Saga, and she just burned through all of the omnibuses. I mean, I've never seen anybody go through 52 comics that hasn't read comics in years so fast.
Right.
She's like, I want more like this. I was like, good luck. This is different. There's nothing like this. I mean, not in comics. It really is amazing what just the independent branch of what used to just be, I mean, like I said, just Superman and Batman and Spider-Man. And I don't know, it really is a beautiful thing. But beyond, you know, creating individual characters, you know, and unique characters in their own universe, you know, I love what you did with Butcher of Paris. I mean, you took what's already a known story. It's a piece of history. And, you know, you turned it into a 5-issue miniseries. And, you know, I was reading it, and I'm thinking, like, there's no action in this. How is this? This is a comic book with no action, but yet I can't wait to get to the next page. You know, it takes a special type of writer to be able to do something like that. Cause sure, someone could do a Jack the Ripper title and, you know, you could see all types of stuff, but the energy doesn't really ramp up until the end, but you're perfectly fine with the ride along the way. And I don't know, I was a massive fan of how you were able to piece that all together so brilliantly. It's, like I said, it's just more testament to all the different levels of comics that you've already played with. I mean, it's insane. I can't believe this is such a, I mean, so when did, well, let's, let me, I guess I'm getting ahead of myself now. Let me back up to where breaking into comics, you know, at what point did you realize this is what I want to do? You know, or was it comics that you originally started wanted to write? Or I see that, I mean, you went to, you're an English major, it looks like.
I have a PhD in rhetoric and composition. So I did my master's in English, PhD in rhetoric and composition. And I mean, I think it was like while working on the PhD that just, you know, I don't think I'd ever considered a career path other than tenured professor. Like, you know, that's kind of when you're in the midst of it, just kind of like what they sell you as. This is the job, like this is the track and the trajectory, and this is where you go and you get this kind of job. And I think it hit a point where I was just like, well, I haven't really considered anything else, and I really prefer being more creative. So there were things that I was really trying to do in like my academic publications, you know, giving things to like science communication journals, and they would just be like, this whole weird thing you did with the intro needs to come out. And I'm like, well, that's the best part of the whole thing. Like, that's what makes the piece unique. And, you know, they weren't looking for that. They were looking for a format, fit the format, sound like everybody else. And, you know, I can do that. I've published multiple academic publications, but I wasn't really interested in doing just that. So I basically just started to think about like what other career opportunities or what kinds of things I actually wanted to do if it wasn't being a tenured professor. I suddenly was like, oh, I'm having like a bit of a crisis. Like, I've been in grad school forever. I'm almost done with my PhD. Like, I didn't really consider that I didn't want to do a PhD and an academic position. You know, I just looked at things that I love. I love video games. I love comic books. And I tried to start to think about like, what are careers that put me around these things that I just really, really love, things that excite me. And started kind of making some friends in the comic book industry. And a few people were kind of just like, why aren't you writing comics? Like, if you like it, you know, if, I have other publications, I've been an editor and I've done these things. You know, I was like, I don't know that that really translates necessarily into making comics, but I thought if nothing else, it would be fun to just make like one comic and do something kind of like creative for myself while I'm finishing the degree. And that comic was Devil Within, that was published by Black Mask.
So that was your breakthrough comic then. Wow.
Yeah, it was the first comic I worked on. It was published by Black Mask, got picked up. And from there, I think the series wasn't even all the way out before I started having meetings with like Aftershock. And Aftershock really became like a really cool place, I think, to just like learn comics and like learn scripting and like work with someone like Mike Martz, who's been in the industry for a while, and like learn from him as well. And you know, I would say like from Descendant, which was my first title to them with them, to something like Nuclear Family, which was my most recent title with them, like I feel like a different writer. Like I feel like I grew a lot between those two titles. And yeah, I'm like really grateful that Aftershock gave that opportunity to work on multiple projects with them and kind of keep kind of growing as a writer. Because these kind of scripts and working in this medium, it's really specific, like learning to work with the artists and be really collaborative with everyone else on the team as well.
I love hearing that. I love hearing how Aftershock has elevated you as a writer, because I've been noticing that Aftershock is elevating just in all levels. I mean, they are skyrocketing as far as just notoriety with the books that they've been putting out lately. I mean, there is just home run after home run. They can't miss, it seems. And to know that throughout that, I mean, they're also interested in, I mean, they're developing their writers as well. And I don't know, it's just, I really have my eye on Aftershock and have been, because I've been noticing just like giant leaps and moves here in like the last, I don't know, 12 to 18 months. And to hear, that's the first I've heard of that, of how, you know, I'm working for Aftershock for this long, I've grown this much and noticed this significant of a development. I mean, that's that says a lot. I mean, I'm them and Scout, they're another one that they do things that just no one else is really doing, and they're leveling up their creators and they're allowing them to do things. And I don't know, it's I love the indie comics world. And I don't know, I haven't got around to reading Nuclear Family yet. I'm actually waiting for the trade on that, because for whatever reason I missed it on my FOCs, and I have a hard time getting back issues. Is there a trade due on that?
Yeah, I think it comes out in November, but I can't remember exactly which day.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's going to be something. When I do my pull list priorities episodes and I go over the FOCs and everything, that's definitely a trade that I'm going to have my eye on for sure, because it's I've heard amazing things, and I'm so bummed that missed my pull list. But I have just about everything else you've done. I mean, Harley Quinn is on my list. I mean, everything. Butcher of Paris, like I said, that was a 5-issue run that I just, I've got a friend, he's I'm huge into true crime. Like, he's one of the biggest true crime memorabilia collectors in the world. I don't know, it's ridiculous what he knows about murder. It's almost scary. But when this book came out, he was so gung-ho, like, man, I want to come on and talk to you about this, because it's like this and this way. And I mean, unfortunately, there were some health issues and everything, and timing didn't work out. But I mean, how excited he was, somebody that he just knows everything about this stuff, how excited he was about this book made me just be that much more interested in it. And I wish I could say I were a history buff. I wish I could say that. I'm just, I admire it. Damn, do I admire it. But I have a hard time retaining that information. But apparently when it's done through comic books, man, I could tell you all about the Butcher of Paris now. Like, this is amazing. But I don't know. I guess I'm steering off track. We were talking about, you know, breaking into comics and all of that. And Aftershock, you know, essentially leveling you up. So I want to talk about, you know, it's kind of, you as a creator starting to gain this notoriety, you know, before the DC comes in and snatches you up and realize their next cash cow. I mean, I'm trying to imagine being in a position to where you're on this track, this career path, and then it's a total U-turn because you realize that you're not going to allowed to be able to be creative, and a creative mind being stifled is just, I don't know. I think that's it's blasphemous. But you realize this, and then you find these creators. Well, I mean, can I ask, you know, who your comic friends were that kind of got you into this? I mean, because it's kind of hard. I mean, I don't know how you just run into comic book friends without being into comics. There's not a million of us out there, like it
Yeah.
seems.
I mean, I worked for a company that was like, they kind of sell like CGC comics or like collected items and stuff like that. So they would
Okay.
go set up at conventions. And I decided that like it would be a fun way to just go like be around the kind of things I liked. And then I would
That's
like,
awesome.
I don't know, figure out something I wanted to do for work that wasn't becoming a tenured professor. And so I went to a convention, and the company I worked with had been like longtime friends with people like Dan Jurgens and Ron Mars and that group.
Okay.
And so yeah, those are some of the guys that were just like, have you ever considered writing comics? You should start working on a script and find an artist. And I connected with Manhouse Online, who drew Devil
Oh
Within
yeah.
with me.
Manhouse, oh man, I didn't put that together. He's nominated for Ringo this year for best cover artist.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. I didn't realize he drew Devil Within. Jesus, it really is a small community. And see, I love hearing that when Dan Jurgens says, "Have you thought about writing comics?" I mean, he obviously sees something there. I mean, 'cause I'm a massive fan of everything Dan's done. So I don't know. This is such a fun story to hear. I mean, I couldn't imagine. It's just so different being a tenured professor and now. What I find unbelievably hilariously ironic is that you're an English major with a PhD writing a character, and then your origin of comics comes from Batman the Animated Series, where one Harley Quinn was spawned. Now you're writing Harley Quinn, a character with a PhD that butchers the English language regularly. So I mean, it's just funny how the universe works out like that. I love that type of irony. But I don't know. It's so you're killing it as as an indie creator. Aftershock is, you know, you're working for Aftershock. You put out The Butcher of Paris. Dark Horse now has you. When does the call from DC come in?
I don't know the exact like timeline. I don't remember what I was working on at the time, but I know that it was Butcher of Paris. That was something that an editor at DC had been reading and was kind of interested in talking with me, and we met at a convention. And it came up that I used to be a fighter, a Muay Thai fighter, and I've been in the
Oh.
ring quite a bit, and I've had a lot of amateur fights. And so they started talking that maybe Ted Grant was kind of a cool character for me to take on in a short story in one of the anthologies. And that's how the Valentine's Day Wildcat story came about, which was actually the first thing I worked on with Riley Rossmo, which was pretty cool. So getting to work on my first DC title with Wildcat, which is a character I just absolutely adore, and working with Riley and getting to really know him, like Riley and I just really clicked as creators. I think he really enjoyed the script and reached out to me, and we ended up having just like a conversation with each other about comics we wanted to work on or the ways that we liked to collaborate and work. I think it was like just a really good conversation, a really good fit. And from there, we just kind of started working on pitching other things. We were actually working on something completely different when we got the call for Harley. So maybe one day in the future, Riley and I will be able to put the other thing out into the world. But
That's awesome.
for yeah, it was really cool. That thing hadn't been greenlit yet. It was just kind of like a pitch, something that we were kind of working on together. And yeah, I was asked to be on Harley, and it was funny because like the day, I think it was like the day before I was asked to be on Harley, Riley showed me some drawings he had done of Harley just for fun. And he was like, "Oh, I just drew these up. I thought it was neat. I would absolutely love to be on a Harley book." And yeah, it was really cool. Like they asked me to be on Harley one day, and the very next day, Riley was on the book with me. And I was like, this is awesome. This is like a really good fit. I think knowing that we work so well together, it's going to make the entire experience really, really good, which it absolutely has been.
Yeah, no, I mean the what you did the f what well, we're on 6 issues now of Harley out, right? You did the
Yes,
first five with Riley.
issue 7 comes out next week, and then there were two Fear States before that, and the New Roots short story with Laura Braga after that.
Yeah, no, this Laura Braga, I mean she murdered it as well on this last issue of
Yeah, she's very good.
Oh my God, jeez, she's 100% on my radar now. I mean, Riley's always been on my radar. I have to ask. I mean, you say you're close with Riley. You hung out. Is he half as fun as his drawing style is? Because
Absolutely.
he, I mean, he looks like he would be the funnest guy to just have a drink with. I mean, just based off of how he draws Harley and Martian Manhunter, and I don't know all the crazy shit that he's drawn. It's just he looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. No, he's incredibly creative, and I think that's part of the fun of having him on a title like Harley Quinn, where we can like really think in unique ways. And I like having long conversations with him about like the arcs and where we're headed, and characters we're creating and getting his take on things. It's really good to have somebody that has such a cool perspective on storytelling, so that if I send him a script or something and I'm like, "Hey, I'm just not sure about the way that this scene is unfolding. Like, can we talk about it?" Like, I really value the input that he brings to that. And it's incredible to get to have a creative partner that can bring something so unique to the table and also just be like a really strong storyteller as well. So like sometimes pages I write will just be 5 million times better than I ever expected because it's a page that has a layout that I would bet money nobody has ever made a layout like this before. It's just so original and unique.
Yeah, no, there's really something special to the way that Riley draws. Like he tells a story in his own way, just with his lines. It's amazing, and it really is. It's the way you two work together. I mean, the art feels synonymous with the way you script Harley and the positions that you put her in, and I mean, even the characters that you create, Kevin. Feels like that's what Kevin would really look like with the giant jaw. And I mean, like but that's because of how you write him as well. Like it's the personalities between the two of you match so well with the personalities that of the characters that you guys are developing and creating. And I don't know, it really is a beautiful thing. This is a this is a series that I mean, the last run of Harley went 75 issues. I could see this going quite a distance as well. Like this is just I do want to talk about creating characters though, because creating characters within DC canon, I mean, how stressful is that? Let's just start with that. I haven't got to ask this question yet. I've talked to Marvel creators and things like that, but creating, I mean, within DC, because it's a whole different fan base sometimes. So I mean, when you come up with Keepsake and Kevin, what are you? I don't want to say what are your plans with them, but what are you thinking with these characters? I don't know if that question makes any sense, but.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's that stressful. It's just, I think DC is really good about things like offering equity and characters and things like that that we've created, and that's awesome from like a business point of view. But it's also something that I feel like editors have been really supportive of. I'm interested in not overshadowing characters that have been in Gotham a long time. So like I love these characters like Hugo, and you know, there's something about the longevity that Hugo has in Batman comics that was really interesting to bring him into a brand new Harley ongoing that has some new characters in it. So new faces plus somebody that has been around Gotham for a very long
Oh,
time. And
yes.
that was something that we wanted to do pretty intentionally. I also just really like Hugo, and I liked the idea of having somebody that would help us right away solidify that, you know, in our story moving forward, something that's super important for her is being intelligent and using her humor in a really weaponized kind of way. And I think Hugo really allowed her to do that. While spinning out of Hugo, we have someone like Keepsake, who's a very different character and I think a little bit of a goofier villain compared to Hugo. And you know where we're headed, we're going to have some more serious villains. So I wanted Keepsake to also offer just kind of like a foil as Harley's getting situated in Gotham. And then you know, the people that we are going to roll out with soon are going to be taking that welcome mat away pretty fast. So
All right. Yeah, that's interesting. If, you know, Keepsake is just kind of the setup to what I mean, what's to come. I mean, it says a lot for what you guys have mapped out. I mean, I love the expansion of the DC universe with all these new characters over the last couple of years. I mean, I know people are one way or another about it. You know, there's too many of them happening, but at the other time, the same ones complaining that, oh, you keep telling the same stories. Well, you need new people. So here we are, and I'm loving the people that you're creating. Even somebody as simple as Kevin, I think he feels like he's going to be such an important character in the Harley Quinn mythos going forward. Just like seeing what she's already willing to put herself through. With this guy, and I don't know, I just my mind is going a million miles an hour thinking of, you know, just the potential for just like I said, a Kevin, you know, it's I don't know. I mean, I want to see these characters live on, and I mean, even if Keepsake is just kind of like you said, a foil, you know, just I don't know if a goof would be the right word. I don't know if I haven't actually got to experience that part yet. I mean, I saw his character design. I was like, all right, this guy's fun. But you know, I mean, I haven't really got to see him interact a whole lot other than, you know, don't him telling Hugo, you know, what his name was or so, whatever it was. But I don't know. I just even then the reveal of him and seeing all the goofy things hanging off of him. I mean, just the name Keepsake, it makes me, I don't know, I get like a collector type of vibe. I don't know. There's just a lot going on with the way I'm analyzing these things, but it's all excitement. You know, I'm so excited to see where it goes forward. And I don't know. It's what you're doing with Harley on an ongoing. It's a big deal. It really is, because I mean, the fan base. I mean, I'm sure I don't need to tell you.
Yeah, no, they're really awesome, and that's one of the I think best parts of working on Harley is having such a dedicated, devoted fan base to something like Harley and the books that we're working on, and getting to interact with them, and also just like be excited about Harley with them is a really cool thing.
Yeah. I have to ask, just out of pure fandom, if you had the choice to write, well, because I mean, we see both or multiples. I don't want to say both sides, several sides of Harley now, because she's definitely not a black and white character. But if you, I mean, but she leans more on the side of good now. I mean, being a part of the Bat family, obviously, but she's also been an absolute bitch too in the past, being next to the Joker. If you had the choice to, I mean, to write the evil version of Harley or the good version of Harley, which one do you prefer? Which one do you think would be more fun to write?
Well, honestly, I don't think that's a very fair word to use for Harley. She is a character that was given to us through an abusive relationship,
That is very
and
true.
so I don't think that that's a very fair or good title for anyone. But yeah, I like the version that we're writing. I think it makes her a further complicated character. It adds, I think, emotional vulnerability to her as a character.
Yes.
And that's something that I've been really interested in exploring.
I totally get it. And I mean, I mean no offense by that, just but like the way she thinks, like she's evil, I guess. And even then, like, Evil, even like, isn't even the right word for her, but on the wrong side, let's put it that way. But I'm kind of with you though, as far as her being a part of the Bat family now. I think she's just she there's so many more layers to her now. I think she has so much more potential. She's I don't know, she's more fun, you know. I always looked at her as the fun one, you know, next to the Joker. You know, that was always the dynamic that interested me the most in the animated series, was when Harley Quinn popped up, because it was, like I said, she just brought it to another level of demented. I guess that's really the word I was more looking for, was demented. But now with, you know, she's obviously she's got Batman on her side, and she has morals and standards and everything. She's very anti-Joker at this point. So I don't know. I really am enjoying the fact that you decided to take the route of continuing to develop her as more of a, I don't even know if you can consider an anti-hero anymore. She's almost a full-blown hero at this point. I mean, as the writer for, I mean, what would you classify Harley as?
I think it's a little difficult. Like she has been an anti-hero in the past. I think right now she doesn't want to be an anti-hero. She wants to be something more, but it's about whether Gotham is going to be accepting of that. And also just, you know, for someone that has been a villain in the past and has done things that have harmed Gotham and other people, I mean, there are some dark storylines with Harley, and those things, even though officially wiped clean by the Suicide Squad, I mean, I think it's important for Harley to not completely forget those things. And the problem that she's having in Gotham is just because she exists, I think people are thinking like, how can she just be like, oh, I didn't do all these horrible things? And I don't think it's about that. I don't think Harley forgives herself. I don't think she fully expects everybody to forgive herself. And that's definitely a lesson she's going to learn throughout this story as well, is that not everybody is going to accept your apology. And that's something that, you know, you have to live with. Like, that's real life. You can say sorry, and not everybody is going to just move on from that. Like our opening scene with Killer Croc, where she apologizes, even makes a cake, and things don't go the way that Harley anticipated in her head, which has been a really important theme for our story, of kind of showing at points like what's in Harley's head versus the reality of the situation. And that's a really cool thing that I think Riley is super good at, like showing the imagined version of the world that Harley sees, or like overlaying past scenes on top of what Harley's looking at, kind of like sheer images of some kind, so that we can kind of see like, oh, this is what's going on in Harley's mind. And it does not fit with the reality of what the reader is seeing. And I think those moments are really interesting. So as much as she maybe wants to be a hero, I think there's also a part of her that isn't allowing herself to be called that just yet, because being a hero is really complicated, and Harley is learning that in our series.
Yeah, no, and you definitely you get that sense of that development too. And I mean, there's even the little things, like, you know, you start, okay, well, no, she's turning good, she's turning good, you know, maybe she's not so crazy anymore. And then one of my favorite panels throughout this entire series is when she's talking to Batman, and Oracle comes in on the headset, and she's like, "Who are you talking to? You got voices in your head too?" I mean, beyond that, just being funny, it's a reminder that, yeah, no, she's not cured. Like, she still has clear issues going on in her head, and you know, she's got some developing to do. And I don't know, there's just so many layers to this character that you've been unpeeling just tremendously well. I mean, it's, I don't know. I've always been a Harley character, but or a Harley fan, but I haven't always been a Harley reader, if that makes sense. You know, I'm kind of in and out. I read Harley when there's a cool story arc coming, but this is, I mean, I'm 100% drawn into how invested you, at least it seems like as a reader, you are as a creator into developing this beloved character. So, I mean, I just gotta say, great job again, because I mean, I'm not at cons. People aren't at cons right now to tell you great job. Are you doing conventions right now?
I'm doing a couple ones that require vaccination. So I did Rose City, and I'm doing New York Comic Con coming up next month.
Gotcha. Right on. Well, I would imagine Rose City was gnarly for it. Was that your first con back?
It was, yeah.
Yeah. Oh man, I can imagine how insane that was for you. But in New York, I mean, they're gonna be lined out at the door to thank you as Harley fans, because you're just, oh man, you're really taking this character to another level, and it's a beautiful thing. I mean, I love the one dynamic that you're really playing well, and throughout the what was it, not Fear State, but the one before the
Oh, Future
Joker
State.
War, or no, I'm thinking of the Joker War outcome.
Okay.
How, you know, even Kevin now, he's a former clown, like it's the clown. It's derogatory term and all of that. Like the way you're using that is just this negative label that has to be fought. You know, I'm not a clown. I'm not a part of that. We're separated from that now. I mean, it's just that in itself. Like, there's this layer of emotion behind it, and I don't know, man. There's just so much to what you're doing. It's no wonder that you have catapulted yourself into the DC ranks so early in your writing career. There's no wonder. I mean, they know what they have here. It's amazing.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, we can, I guess we can continue on from Harley now, because you're doing more than that. I do want to talk a little bit more about Butcher of Paris, though. Did you study history at all while you're going through and getting your PhD? Or I mean, where did this love come from for you to take this particular moment in time and say, this is what I want to do? Because I mean, there's just so many different, as a history buff, there's a billion different things you could do. And even as a true crime fan, there's a billion different things you could do. What brought you to do this story?
I don't actually typically like true crime, or at least the way
Okay.
it's portrayed. I feel like it's really sensational, and I see, like, I saw somebody recently who had like tattoos of people like Ted Bundy, and it was just like, I don't know, they were kind of like laughing about serial killers, and in my mind, all I can think is like, what if you walk by somebody who is, I don't know, like descendant of somebody that was killed by one of these people, a victim, their family, and you've immortalized this person because you think, like, trading cards of these killers is like a fun thing. I think there is some good that maybe comes from true crime in terms of just like, for women, tips and information to like know what you should be aware of, like checking your car when you come back to it, or parking in well-lit places around other people, like things that you should be conscientious of at all times. Like, I think those things are good things, but I was pretty hesitant to do a story because I didn't want to sensationalize this killer, who's they think killed anywhere from like 60 to 200 people, which is a
Yeah, I
really,
mean,
really wide range.
that's like saying it's going to snow or it's going to be 100 degrees today. Like
Yeah, it's a
that's
pretty big
such,
disparity. But the vast majority of the people that he killed were Jewish people trying to flee the city during the Nazi occupation. There were so many people being taken away on a daily basis that getting out of the city, it was really important. And this is somebody that saw an opportunity, and I don't necessarily think was like on the side of the Nazis. I think he was just absolutely insane and wanted to kill people and saw an easy way of doing that. And yeah, we wanted it to be a book that was far more about the situation, like about this moment in history that led to this happening, where you have a city that's actually full of serial killers, because I'm going to go ahead and call Nazis serial killers. And
Well, no, I mean, you even did in the at the end, in the article that you wrote. I mean, I was even glued to that. On, I mean, and I understand. I mean, what the end of that your little wrap up there. I mean, it says, it really does answer the question as to why you wrote this book, for sure. But I mean, to reiterate the fact, I mean, yes, Nazis are 100% serial killers, and you reiterate that in the article at the end too. I mean, I guess I'm just saying, I even read the article, and it really just sunk me in after that first issue even more into the next four, knowing what you're actually trying to get across there. But for those of you that didn't, that didn't read that article in the first issue, I mean, I'll let you continue. But yeah, no, go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt there. I'm very excited to hear this.
I think why I came to the story, just wanting to tell a story that didn't focus on the killer, but on the people that were trapped in the city with the Nazis, and how that moment in history could allow somebody to do something like this and fly under the radar for so long. So the story is really more about the occupation, about Paris, about the detective and his son, and the relationship that he has of trying to be a father and a detective at the same time, like working with multiple layers of difficulty. Like, the Nazis have really taken over the police station, are kind of in control of your job, but if you quit, you just leave it all to the Nazis. So there's kind of this deliberation of like, I shouldn't just leave it to them, but I also don't like them. I'm still trying to be a father, right. And now trying to solve the potential serial killer loose in Paris, which is also another layer that he has to deal with.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the moral standard at the end of even testifying. You know, do I want to help the people that, you know, shun me? Or, I mean, there really is just so much more than, there's nothing celebratory about this character at all. The end courtroom scene, like, he comes out and, you know, it really is pathetic as to how he was able to get, you know, the entire courtroom on his side. And but by no means did I think that you were celebrating him or sensationalizing him in any way. If anything, you were just playing more testament as to how depraved and just psychopathic he really was. You know, he wasn't, even though his attitude was written to come off charming, the way his body language was and the way he was drawn out, and even just some of the way you scripted him, you still knew that this was, despite that everybody else is on his side, this was not, I don't know. It really is brilliant how you made this guy just look like the asshole he really is, without, like I said, making him, oh, cool, the next big killer, you know? I don't know. It's, your intentions here were met 100%. I'll give you that. it's absolutely amazing.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
You don't really have any real interest in serial killers or anything like that. It's just a matter of, you know, you wanted to let people know that in this moment in history, there was some real shit things going on that I don't know. I love what you're actually getting to with this. I want to move on beyond Butcher of Paris, because I've gushed enough. Like, this is, I'm living moments that I've been anticipating for like a year now. I love this. You've got other ongoing stuff going on, stuff that I'm not quite as familiar with, like A Man Among You. I read the first issue. I did check that out. And it's, I mean, let's talk about the other stuff you have going on now, or even the stuff that's in the works that you can talk about. What is A Man Among You your first Image comic?
It's through Top Cow.
That is Top. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Yeah, it was something that we brought to Top Cow kind of a long time ago. I was years ago a talent hunt winner at Top Cow, I think before I had published anything. And it kind of turned into like a really cool relationship with Top Cow. And they opened the door to like kind of pitch some things. And one of the editors really took a liking to that story in particular. And yeah, that's how that story kind of came about.
That's awesome. I mean, it is getting to write this type of story. I mean, it is 100% like just badass female empowerment. I mean, this chick is 100% capable. I love watching her, just her mannerisms, everything about her confidence. It's just in a situation where, I mean, they state it right in the first issue, like, what's a woman doing on a ship? And here she is just running the hell out of things with I love this character. I think she's going to be one to live on for quite some time. Is this an ongoing then, or is this a mini series?
Right now it's ongoing. I'm not entirely sure what the future for it holds. You know, it would be awesome to continue making it. We're in our second arc of it right now. And it's definitely a fun story to tell. So yeah, hopefully we get to keep going.
Right on. Right on. I gotta ask, I mean, is there anything we could expect as far as announcements? I mean, obviously not the announcement itself, but I mean, you got anything special planned for New York Comic Con? Anything that the people lining up can expect?
Not particularly. I'll be doing a DC panel on Thursday with Josh Williamson and Philip Kennedy Johnson, and an Aftershock panel Sunday. So a couple of, I think they released the panel schedule. I don't quite know it, but I think that's up on their website now. So I'll be at both of those. And hopefully talking a little bit more as well about the new Amazon project that I just announced with Peter Krause called We Only Kill Each Other. So we'll be kind of promoting that one at the event.
Oh, I'm not familiar with this. We Only Kill Each Other. Peter, right on. Now, what, this is coming out of Aftershock?
No, it's coming out from Amazon.
Amazon, so it's, okay.
Yep, it's a Comixology Originals. It will be out November 16th. The same day as Wonder Woman, actually, and it's about Jewish gangsters pre-World War II who were kind of contracted by the U.S. government to take on the Nazi movement that was happening in the U.S. and basically just go like beat up Nazis and try to get them to stop holding rallies in the New York streets.
You really hate them Nazis. I love it.
As I think we should.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah, no, there's not enough Nazi hate out there, you know. That's really like the one form of hate that there's just not enough of, Nazi hate. Oh man, I love that I've got to have this conversation with you. I can't wait for the day that I actually get a walk up to your table. I would imagine next con season I'm going to be hitting the circuit myself, and I can't wait to personally shake the hand of the person that's creating all of this stuff that I've enjoyed and I'm admiring so much.
Thank you.
But before I let you go though, there's something I haven't done in a while that I used to do back whenever, but I got to know, just to kind of get into your head a little bit more as a creator before I let you go, I got to know, in your mind, who is the best protagonist in all of comics? Not necessarily superhero, but your favorite protagonist.
I mean, I think there's a reason Batman has so much staying power and has been like the gateway for so many people into comics. I don't know that that necessarily means he's always my favorite to write, but I think that he just holds so much possibility and opportunity. And especially when you put him with other characters, I really love seeing him interact, or I guess I should say other characters interact with him. Because he's, you know, likes to be a bit of a loner. But I think he's just like so universally recognized, you know, a character that, you know, I can write a lot of characters for DC, but I think that's the one that my non-comic book family kind of latches onto, like, oh crap, you did stuff with Batman. Like, that is, I think, what non-comic book people also just really gravitate towards. And obviously comic book people keep coming back for it, which is why it's just such a big line at DC.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, that's a great answer. And that, well, you know, I'm ashamed to say I didn't realize that you were doing Legends of the Dark Knight, or at least a couple issues of it, until I started preparing for this podcast. The fact that you're doing a Penguin arc like that, I just cleared the next hour of my schedule after this so that I can read this, because Penguin, that's my DC dude as far as villains go. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he's just the most interesting lunatic out there, and I cannot wait to see what you do with this character. But I mean, on those same lines, I mean, do you have a favorite shithead in comics, a favorite antagonist?
Yeah, I don't know that he's shitty. I think he ends up being someone that's really likable, but I like, I mean, to an extent, I like Mr. Freeze. I've always liked his motivations, and yeah, I think he's super interesting. So I also just like him visually. Like, I think he's one of the coolest villains to get to like write in a script and see different artists take on him. So yeah, I definitely hope to do more with him outside of the Harley Quinn annual for sure.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Oh, I love it. I know they're kind of white bread questions, but I think it really does say a lot about, we're, what the creator's into. So I love those answers. Mr. Freeze, I gotta say, that one's a first. Batman, I mean, there's a reason why Batman's Batman. It's 80 years later. I mean, yes, he's obviously one of the greatest protagonists in all of comics. Mr. Freeze is the antagonist. That's a new one to hear, and I enjoy that. Stephanie, this really has been an absolute pleasure. This is a bucket list interview for sure. You've broken ground. Now it's now let the floodgates of other DC ongoing creators break through. No, this is for those of you or the listeners that don't know. I mean, do you have social media handles people can follow or they get to know you a little better?
Yeah, just Twitter at Steph underscore Smash.
Right on. Right, just Twitter, not on Instagram.
I am, but I honestly don't know what my handle is. I have
Gotcha.
like it's linked to my Instagram, so I don't really sign into it all that often.
No judgment. I don't know what my Twitter or Instagram handle is either. Well, thank you so much once again. I know you creators are awfully busy. You've got Harley to write and New York Comic Con to prepare for. But really, once again, thank you, not just for coming on this podcast, but for what you've done in comics and what it seems that you plan on doing and keep doing. So just you're here, you're on our radar. We all appreciate you. I speak amongst all of us.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. If there's ever any time that you want to chat about comics, Cheers to Comics always has a mic open for you, Stephanie. In the meantime, you stay safe and we'll chat soon.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Greetings, henchmen and loyal subjects. I am Evan the Great.
And I'm JVD. We're your hosts of the Fictional Battle Podcast, Crossover Collision, brought to you by the Villains Demand.
If you love hearing in-depth breakdowns of your favorite characters and what they are capable of doing while fighting in random battlegrounds against other fan favorites, then this is the podcast for you.
New episodes drop every Friday wherever you listen to your favorite podcast or over on thevillainsdemand.com.
I'd like to remind you about a book that I've spoken highly of in the past on this show before, and that's Unicorn Vampire Hunter. Kayla Palmquist has been on the show a couple of times now. And my little 7-year-old, my 7-year-old girl, she is a massive fan of Unicorn Vampire Hunter. And guess what? Well, I'm sure you could guess. It's back. It's back on Kickstarter. So if you go on over to unicornvampirehunter.com, and you're gonna want to back this book, people, whether you have kids or not. It's just a fun story, and I normally would have Caleb on to talk about it, but scheduling stuff happened, and I wasn't gonna not have this book be spouted about from the rooftops. So metaphorically speaking, of course. So head on over to unicornvampirehunter.com and find out what it's all about, man. It's all in the title. It's a thing of beauty, and it's one of those books that I can't not recommend, and especially if you've got youngsters. Mine, she's addicted. She's addicted. So once again, head on over to unicornvampirehunter.com and get you some of this Caleb Palmquist goodness. Well, there you have it. Another creator has been cornered, episode 362. In the books. How about that, Stephanie Phillips, huh? I mean, I guess there's just things that you don't say to, there's certain words that you don't use to describe certain characters to certain creators, And, yeah, whoops. But she didn't leave on me, you know. She didn't just get up and walk the hell out. But we made it. We all made it. Beyond my little kerfuffle with descriptive words there. I really do think it was an incredible conversation. I had a blast. It was awesome being able to talk to a DC creator currently working on an ongoing DC title. It's just fun stuff, man. And I really am excited. You got to check out Harley Quinn, people. And she's doing fun stuff with the character. Doing a good job of developing Harley Quinn. Because I don't... Yeah. All right, there you have it. Remember to check out CheersToComics.com. And if you're in the mood to buy some comics, you could always go to ShopCheersToComics.com. You know, when you're at CheersToComics.com, don't think when you go to store you're just going to see a bunch of Cheers to Comics merchandise. You know, no. No, it's a comic book retail store, baby, so get all excited about that, and there's even more exciting stuff to come there. I do recommend that if you are not subscribed to the YouTube channel, or a member of the Facebook group, or you like the Cheers to Comics Facebook page, you need to do that, because some live streaming is coming, baby. And it happens already, but I'm talking live sales. That's all, it's in the pipeline. It's coming soon. There you go. All right, I'll talk to you the next time. There's things about comics to talk about. In the meantime, I command that you stay safe and read responsibly. Cheers, you fuckers.
Hi, you're listening to Cheers to Comics podcast.
Hey everyone, I'm Monty Michael Moore, and this is the Cheers to Comics podcast with Brian Wayne.
This is Drew Zucker. You're listening to the Cheers to Comics podcast.
This is Mark Russell, and you're listening to the Cheers to Comics podcast.
Podcast recommendations, you ask? Brian Wayne here, co-curator of The Apocalypse. And I know that sounds gnarly. That's because it is gnarly, man. The Apocalypse. What is The Apocalypse? The Apocalypse is a culmination of the gnarliest podcast, independent podcast, the internet has to offer. So instead of trying to go to Twitter the next time you need a new podcast to listen to and try to get Twitter famous, podcast recommendations, please. Just think The Apocalypse, man. And it's ironic because The Apocalypse is only the beginning. It's only the beginning. Just go to podchaser.com. It's in the top list. The top list in the whole world. So whether you're looking for true crime, sports, role-playing, I don't know, anything. Think of a podcast. It's on the Apocalypse. It's like the apocalypse with a D. And do not forget to follow The Apocalypse on Twitter as well. Once again, that is The Apocalypse. If you're looking for a podcast recommendation, The Apocalypse is sure to have something for you.